Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
This is continuing coverage of United States versus Sean Diddy Combs from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Well, things are not going well for Diddy, to put it lightly. There's been a lot of testimony, a lot of people with a lot of stories, and it's all coming to light. Joining me to discuss the latest in the case, Robin Dreeke, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. We've learned more about what's happened with Cassie. We've learned more about what her mother has said about it. We've learned about Diddy allegedly blowing up someone's car. I mean, this is the stuff. I mean, it feels like it's from a bad rap music video where, like, there's flames and they're walking away from the car and then they start dancing. But this is real life. I mean, this is real extreme life where art seems to kind of take over their life, but it wasn't art. It was abuse. What's been your reactions this last week?
Yeah, definitely all that. And, you know, it's interesting too, that incredible testimony. And at the same time, I'm still waiting for the trafficking stuff to get in here. I think this is hard hitting, very graphic, very granular and emotional testimony. But at the same time though, I'm waiting for, and hopefully get to the hard hitting stuff, which is really going to start really making an impact and starting helping people move down a path for healing, because I think he had a massive negative impact on a lot of people. And so I want people to be able to feel safe to come out and say something and testify.
I hope they do, because we already have one witness that's missing, a big one, Jane Doe number 3, that's supposed to testify, the government's witness. I mean, you know, of all of the people that have now made claims against Diddy, there's hundreds of civil lawsuits going on. The government didn't just grab everybody and say, okay, you're all in this case. They really picked very specific ones that they knew they had the receipts on, the goods of what actually took place. And now we don't know where the hell she is. And her attorney's not getting back to anybody. I don't want to speculate too much, but in a case like this, I'm going to guess somebody got to her, or her fear took over And she just said, this is not worth it to me to be out there. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you hit that key word, fear. You know, you and I were talking before the show as well. And everyone in my own life, you know, we look at fear as one of the greatest motivators for human actions. Because when someone is threatening in your own perception, your safety, security, and prosperity, it really is going to influence the decisions you make. And so what has basically transpired is, number three did not feel safe and she feared testifying. Now, where that threat came from, whether it's self-inflicted, whether it's an external force or individual somewhere else, because what the prosecution basically do, what the government was unable to do was allow her to feel safe, testify.
Yeah.
And that's the bottom line.
And there's only so much they can do to help someone feel safe. I mean, they're not going to give you, 24-hour security. That's up to you at some point. But it doesn't mean it's going to stop somebody who has a vendetta. And the difference with Diddy, too, these aren't just, oh, my gosh, I'm going down. I'm going to start threatening people. And it's like some completely one-off behavior, like he's never threatened anybody in the past. And you can kind of take it lightly. This is decades of influence, of inflicting fear on people, of threatening people, of exposure or even possibly death, it seems, in some of these cases. This is a long-term thing with him, with his power and his, what he wants to hold people accountable for if they turn on him. He's had this for quite some time. Let me ask you this. When you have something like this, long-term patterns of abuse while being surrounded by enablers, which clearly he's had, assistants, loyalists, they've normalized this kind of behavior. When you deal with individuals in powerful positions who evade accountability for years, what are some of the markers that indicate someone's power has, eroded their capacity for empathy or self-reflection or realizing, hey, there's no self-awareness, it seems, with Diddy, the way that he was treating people from what we've been learning.
If everyone listening and watching just kind of rewinds that, what did it sound like you're describing was a complete dictator of a nation state? Because really that's what's going on here is the dictator doesn't even have to say what to do. The implied actions against the state, which is the dictator himself, has consequences without the dictator even saying so. And so the way this impacts is that over a long period of time, there's just this inherent fear and you have a lack of understanding of where that threat's going to come from and by who. And so it just places a large number of large amount of fear on everyone involved.
And that's the thing with this. It's everyone involved. It's a whole environment. It's not just one person. And yeah, I mean, that's what a dictator does. It's a government. Mm-hmm. So you got all these people around you. And that seems to be kind of what he did. I mean, they described him not just, intimidating the partners that he's had, but assistants, drivers, hotel staff, to basically anything he wants, whether it be don't tell anybody about this, security video, to don't tell anybody about, the 58 bottles of baby oil that I just poured in a bathtub and expect you to go in. Everybody who's involved in the staging of all these things, they're all in on it. I guess, let's speak to that for a little bit and how someone gets there and how you can get that many people on your side to go down the road of bad behavior, even if it's not to benefit you, it's to benefit this sick guy over here.
So again, pure conjecture here, but you start with a lever of influence of the cult of more, where you're enticing people into the cult by promises, by expectations of something better, something more. And so people are looking to better their potential for careers or looking for more monetary gain. And so you get sucked in by the cult of more, and then the lever of influence of fear starts take an effect, whether that fear is losing the more you have or fear of reciprocity, or you start seeing weird behaviors around you of people just disappearing. That's an implied threat. I mean, there's all kinds of ways that manipulation starts happening. And there's only the very close ones that actually understand exactly what's going on. The dictator's chief of staff and the really small cabinet around them. And the challenge here is that everyone to Diddy is nothing but a screwdriver, a tool to serve him. Some screwdrivers are a little rusty and they're at the bottom of the totem pole. Some are like golden plated. But you know what? That golden plated can be melted right off and thrown away as well. And so I think everyone is disposable once you've reached that certain level, because when you're caught up in that cult of more and that disease of comparison, the levers are very powerful. And since this is a dictatorship without a rule of law, you have no, there's such unexpected reciprocity and you don't know what the rules are oftentimes, except stay silent, stay safe. And the only way to do that is to keep to yourself. Don't share anything, disappear, don't ruffle feathers, you know, so that's what fear does when you don't have an actual law system in place of reciprocity. And that's why everyone also did abhorrent things that were against the law, that were illegal, that were heinous towards other human beings, because they were living in their own mini nation state. I mean, really, just do that thought experiment of what the size of this was, how long it took place. He had his own little mini nation going on here, slash cult, but same sort of result.
And that's the really creepy thing about this, is that it was that mini nation. It's kind of amazing how quickly people can be influenced to follow something that they otherwise know is inherently bad. Where 3 weeks before meeting Diddy, if someone said, okay, you're going to go and you're going to be cleaning up these hotel rooms after he's done these horrible things, you go in and you just see utter destruction and you see people that have been beaten. You see people that are literally on IVs to survive and keep going. And this is your new job. This is your job to help pick up after this. How do you normalize something like that? How do you think he normalized something like that? Because I would think on day one, if that's your job, you'd be like, I'm out. But it's got to be a slow build. It must not be day one you're in there cleaning up the freak-offs. Maybe you're, I don't know, cleaning the kitchen or something. And then it just slowly goes to that. I don't know. I mean, it goes to such extremes. It seems very quick for a lot of these folks, but they seem to be able to mold themselves around this job. Is that because it's the excitement of, well, it's Diddy, you know, in the aura of I get to be close to Diddy. It doesn't matter what he does. I mean, does celebrity play a role in that? And the image that he had and what he commanded, was that star power just something where people are ready to say, well, screw the rules of human behavior. I'm going to go along with this.
Yeah, I definitely think that is a part of it. I think every individual responds to it differently as well. But in general, I mean, just think about this. A lot of times, so the people that were first indoctrinated that come in at the lower levels of his nation state, of his dictatorship, you know, you're slowly indoctrinated, possibly or potentially. And then a lot of them are aspiring stars, aspiring risers, or people that want to be part of that circle of celebrity. And so when you have someone at the top or the people around the person at the top where he has that massive reputation, I mean, he is known as Diddy. And if Diddy or his circle says this is the way it's done, you now have massive groupthink and social proof saying, huh, everything I read and everything I saw about and every dream I had of this utopia of how the music industry worked was completely wrong. And so you don't want to go against our own mindset of what is and what we wanted to be and aspire to in life. And so I was wrong. These people must be right in order for me to move forward and not be counter to things I believed in, the things I wanted to do for my own life, my career, my music career, all these things. I must adapt myself to what the group says is normal in this environment. And so it's a choice, but it's you can see social proof is extremely powerful with people, especially when you've already decided in your mind that you want to be part of this kind of organization, part of group and part of industry. And when that industry then tells you en masse, because Diddy was the industry for a lot of people, the industry says, this is the behavior you have to have. This is what you have to do to be part of this group. You're going to comply.
Yeah, because it wasn't just him that was saying it. I mean, he had his little army. His enablers enabled new enablers. He didn't even have to do it half the time. It was just...
Dictators very rarely get in the weeds.
Yeah, it's if you go into a new environment and you have no idea what being a celebrity is like, you have no idea what that world is like because it's not common, it's not normal unless you're in it. And suddenly you're in it, oh, this is what it's like. And it's not what I expected it to be. Oh, my goodness. Will they do this? And all these people around are saying that this is okay and this is how we do it. I guess you very quickly fall in line if your ultimate goal is what you want for yourself. If that's to be the next Diddy or just to be a music star, whatever they were trying to glean off of Diddy, what sort of advantage they were trying to get with being close to him, that outweighed their moral compass, I guess, to a certain extent. Is it that? Is it brainwashing? Because a lot of these people who've come out of this, I mean, when they're not in the Diddy land, they seem like very moral, rational human beings. But it's scary how quickly morals go out the window when you're in the presence of someone or something that you think you're going to use to your advantage. It seems then like maybe for some, others don't really matter. The emotions don't matter because it's going to benefit you and this has the path to get there.
Well, you also start second-guessing what you think is right or wrong. You second-guess your own morals and ethics because when you are seeing something for the first time and your initial response is abhorrence and withdrawing and saying, oh my gosh, that's wrong. But even the people that it's being done to, the immoral, indecent acts, they are also living in fear. So they're saying, oh no, it's fine. And so they're rationalizing that behavior onto themselves. And so now with you as an outsider coming in, you're seeing bad things being done to others, but the victims of those bad things, they're telling you it's okay because this is normal. It's the way things are done. And so it's rewriting your own morals and ethics on top of what you've learned already. And then you're rationalizing it to yourself because you want to be part of this group. You want to be part of this organization. You think it's a healthy organization because of what everyone's saying is it's fine. I mean, this is why as a species we thrive, because we have the ability to tell stories, we have the ability to gossip, and we have the ability to collectively move together in groups and organizations because we have this kind of communication and groupthink. But when someone does it for ill means, whether it's an individual in the music industry or a nation state, it still has the same outcome. You can destroy lives.
Yeah. Kid Cudi, he testified this week. He's a rapper that was dating Cassie for a short off period between Diddy and Cassie. Well, Diddy, of course, did not like that. He made comments to Cassie that he was going to blow up his car. And then a few weeks later, his car was firebombed. Yeah, I think it's easy to see what took place here and who likely instigated it. How likely do you think this happened in a bubble where this is the first time Diddy went out and firebombed someone's car or took things to this extreme? Or is this just one of the few that made it to light because people who've had this happen to them, they don't want to see what's going to happen next and they haven't spoken again? I can't imagine this is the only time he's gone to an extreme like this. Just conjecture.
Yeah, very rare to go 0 to 100, as we say. There's an arc of behavior. I guarantee you there is other violence or threats of violence leading up to a firebombing of a car before that. So I seriously doubt that's the first and only data point that we're going to see or that's been done before. So, but yeah, all it takes is that one act that's got seen by others and it becomes the unwritten rule about how not to have that done to you.
There really was, I mean, it seems to be a world of two Diddies. There's this very dark, evil type character that has zero accountability and zero empathy for anyone other than himself. And then you have the Diddy family man, the philanthropist that we saw out in public that was helping this and helping that and his kids. They seem to love him still to this day. You know, they're showing up in court despite the horrific things that are being said about dad. That's, I think, one of the things that is really hard for people to wrap their mind around, how he could flip to be this guy at night or wherever it was, and he could be this guy during the day. And one's the devil and one's a saint. How is that mind? How is his mind operating that allows him to just compartmentalize things to such an extreme and almost like literally be two different human beings?
Good question. I think everyone's different on this one too. Well, we see a lot, and you and I see it on social media and people on social media, and there's people that are very congruent with their behavior, both on and off screen. I mean, you and I are pretty much the same people everywhere we go. Mm-hmm. And that makes it very congruent for people to understand. But at the same time, though, there's a lot of people that are entertainers. And so an entertainer could very easily explain away their behaviors like, oh, when I'm at work, I'm entertaining. When I'm being Diddy, I'm entertaining. When I'm being Dad, I'm being this. And so reconciling those two, that's the challenge for people to make is when people don't see what's going behind the scenes of the public persona, that's the challenge. But there's leakage. There's always leakage with human behavior. And the leakage comes from incongruencies. There's leakage coming from, you know, tempo changes, communication style changes. And so, in other words, if you ever watch someone or observe someone for a period of time, and over that period of time, you kind of take a step back and say, like, that was odd.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. You know, the first time you said that was odd, it could just be a one-off. But if you're saying, well, that's odd, I don't understand that. I don't understand why they said that. I don't understand what that behavior is. Why did the people around him over here act a little bit differently than in this instance over here? I don't understand how these two are the same. See what I mean? When you start getting inconsistencies, we're picking up on the leakage of there might be something more going on. Not saying there is something devious going on, but there's something going on. In other words, there might be more to that 5-second highlight reel that they're putting out in front of you to 24 hours of suck that's going on behind it.
That's got to be a traumatic thing for anyone who's gone through it, but then to realize, to kind of have your moment where you come back to reality and you see reality for what it is, and you see, oh my God, like I've been part of this. That how does that happen? Like, is it a switch that flips in people sometimes where it's, oh shit, like this is the line. This went too far. Or, I mean, there's a lot of people that certainly did get out of this and people who are testifying against him and people who have stories. But what does it take to realize that you're involved in this culty-like thing to escape? Is it a level of deviant behavior that pushes someone away? Or is it, I don't know, because once people are in these sort of cult-like situations, it's really hard to pull them out.
It is, and not everyone can make it. I mean, so great example. The thing that popped in my mind when you're describing this, think to the Ruby Frankie case and Kevin Frankie.
Yeah.
Here's a husband that was caught up in the cult of his wife and Jody Hildebrandt, and he's still to this day, you can tell he's not totally bought in with, that was really bad. Well, he says it's bad, but you know, I still love her. I mean, see, you can kind of see this playing out with Diddy people too. Well, I still really like Diddy. Oh yeah, it was bad, but oh, I really like Diddy. I mean, so some people are gonna be like, oh man, that was crazy. That was nuts. I think what really happens and what's really critical in these situations is who's in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Having, as you and I've said numerous times on this case, our own lives and everything else, is that having loving critics in our lives that can be objective for us in the face of our own emotional hijacking is really key and critical. It's very hard to do it for ourselves. That's why we have someone stand with us that is saying, hey, that's really weird shit going on. Knock it off.
Yeah.
As well as, even though I can't do it for myself in this moment because I'm emotionally attached to the outcome, emotionally attached to the person, I can do it for the person that is my loving critic. I can be their loving critic because I'm objective for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's a key. Anytime a loving critic in your life, and it's got to be loving, someone you trust, someone who's not giving you information and dialogue and feedback for their own good, but only for your good, when they say something's off, you have to listen. Even though 99% of you wants to get drawn in and you want to do it, if your loving critic says, you need to pull back, you got to pull back.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'd rather be wrong 5% of the time, 10% of the time, than 100% of the time or 90% of the time. In other words, let that loving critic be there for you to see objectively what's going on. And if you don't have one, be very wary of the decisions you're making when you start dealing with really weird, odd behavior and people that kind of set your hairs on the edge of your arm up and actually says, at any time you're saying, that's odd, that's off, or even someone else is saying the same thing, just pay attention.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.